Testing. Okay, good evening. Thank you, and welcome to Networking Fundamentals. No, this is not Low Power FM. I apologize. That was my screw up. I'm competing in the robot battle tomorrow afternoon, and that does not work particularly well with my time slot of 2:30 p.m. So fortunately, we could change the slot around. So thank you. Hopefully this will be interesting to some people. If I could ask a favor, please, this is fairly A, interactive, and B, audio-visual intensive. So if everybody could shuffle forward to these couple of rows, you'll at least be able to see what's going on the screen. Plus, we will be showing movies, so you want a good view. So while we're reviewing the ground rules, everybody, please move down. By the way, I pick on people who sit at the back, because I do this sort of talk show style and wander around. So the further forward you're sitting, the better you'll be off. Now, a couple of the ground rules. This is fun because I say it's fun. Okay, if you disagree, feel free to walk. Questions and constructive comments are welcome at any time. This is more interactive than it is meant to be a lecture. Debates and hecklers will be ignored. Anybody who wants to argue protocols may leave now. Please remember, I don't get paid for this. Anybody who has a elite dude attitude can leave now, because we're not going to be talking about elite dude wares and hacking stuff. Networking is a big field. I had to pick and choose things that are fundamental level, so hopefully you're getting the sort of networking 101 course that would go to a first year comp sci class that would be spread out over about 6 months, compressed into an hour. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. And there's no exam. And again, I am so sorry for the time change. So, very briefly, let's watch a movie preview, because this is what we're going to do again.
He came with a message, with a protocol all his own. To a world of cruel firewalls, uncaring routers, and dangers far worse than death. He's fast, he's strong, he's TCP/IP, and he's got your address. Warriors of the Net.
Is the short movie we're going to be watching this right at the end. And hopefully you'll know enough by that stage that we're going to do this Misty 3K style. Okay, so this has gotten already incredibly cornball theme to it. And so hopefully we'll be able to kibitz and make nasty comments. And people who actually do networking for a living like Dragon are more than welcome to join in. Anybody who's got the appropriate costume is more than welcome to sit at the front. And I'm indebted to Ericsson Media Lab for producing this thing. This is not my work. These guys did a wonderful effort and basically distributed it out to anybody who wanted to download it for free. Unfortunately, it's a little hard to find on the net these days, so if anybody wants a copy, can't find it on the net, find me on the SE2600 list and ask nicely. And if you've got a fast connection, you can download it. Failing that, we'll have to cut a CD and get it to you at one of the meetings. So, what we're going to cover, what is a network? I'm not going to go into each of these things, but basically this is what I'm going to be talking about. Some of the gadgets that go towards making up a network. So the things you'll find hidden in the closets and under the floors and various other things like that. Specifically, we're going to be talking about Ethernet and the IP protocol, because those, of course, have taken over the world in the last few years. We're going to be talking a little bit about home networking and LAN party networking, the things that are important for setting those up, because just as a quick review, how many people have a home network or would like to have a home network? How many people have been to a LAN party? Okay. Anybody seen problems at LAN parties? Right. Okay, so we're hopefully going to cover some of the basics and avoid some of the major problems. And then right at the end, I've got some resources, some URLs where you can find out a lot more information online. There's a lot more stuff on the net than there used to be. This is a lot more self-documenting than there used to be. There are lots of great For Dummies books out there and so forth. So without any further ado, on with the show. Basic question, what is a network? The classic textbook CompSci definition is devices interconnected to share resources, which is pretty bland and generic. But just like influence or political networks, there is a many-to-many sharing of something going on. Now, what that something may be differs from network to network. We also talk about network webs, which is distinguished from the World Wide Web, the www of a URL line, as being a particular type of web network, of hyperlinks. So it's perfectly acceptable to talk about network webs and have nothing to do with hypertext transfer protocol, HTTP. So that usage, although it's falling out of fashion, is still current. There are other networks out there besides the internet. There's the phone network, which pretty much everybody takes for granted and is familiar with, and is probably still the most complex network on the face of the planet to this point, although it's very rapidly being taken over by IP-based networks. Telegraphy is still a valid network. Telex is still a valid network. Anybody here know what Telex is? Ever used a Telex machine? Okay. It's almost unheard of in this country now, but particularly in the third world, where you're trying to send signals over bits of barbed wire and string, Telex is still particularly popular because it's low speed and there's lots of cheap equipment out there. So 20-year-old machines. Then we're talking about various data networks. There should be a comma there. Because there are other data networks besides the internet, with a capital I. Each bank and the banking industry in general have their own specific networks. A lot of large corporations have their own specific networks. Most of those these days have moved to IP as a protocol because it was faster, simpler, and cheaper, simply because that's the way the entire industry is going, so the benefits of mass production affected their networks as well, but not all of them. So bear in mind we're covering only a very small subsection of the types of network that are going to be out there. Very briefly, this was somewhat of a religious war about 20 or 30 years ago as to what was the best way to build a network. And here we're talking about data networks, bits. Okay. Now, whether those bits represented digitized voice or whether they represented computer data was immaterial. There were two main theories of how to set up networks. Now, I'll go into who was on which camp in a moment, but basically the two different types of networks were switched and packet-switched networks. Switched is very much like the old phone system used to be. Every single connection sets up a circuit between the two endpoints that are trying to talk to each other. Circuits can be virtual constructs. In other words, they don't have to be physical pairs of wires. They can be simply be paths through the network. But they have to be set up and torn down, and that takes time. Now, the most familiar network that's of the switch type to you is the phone network. Now, I'm ignoring the fact that a lot of phone networks now are packet switch networks, okay? But the phone companies, which were referred to as the Bell Heads after Ma Bell, only saw this particular vision of the world, that everything had to be switched like a phone system. So they switched data like they switched everything else. Thus, even today, you'll hear things like T1 circuits. Okay, setting up a T1, even if it's running over something packet switch like frame relay, is still a switched circuit architecture. It is permanent from the time it's set up, a point-to-point connection. Okay? Packet switch networks came about because the code heads, data heads, various other names, people who weren't Bell heads, weren't network phone engineers, turn around and said, that's all very well, but if we're somebody like the military, say the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, we'd like our network to be somewhat more robust. Because the problem with a switch network is if somebody disables the switch, large portions of it go offline. A packet switch network is a completely different concept, and at the time was rather radical. The concept with a packet switch network is that data is divided up into discrete packets, okay, parcels, envelopes of data. They're not always routed the same way through the network. Think of it rather like the post office, how the post office delivers letters. Suppose I can only send first-class letters less than 2 ounces. I have to ship you 500 pages. Okay? What I would do, and I wouldn't do this in real life, but what I would do to do it under those conditions is split it up into a number of pages that would fit into envelopes, address each one to you, and just dump it in the post box. Okay? Or maybe several post boxes if I filled up more than one. So those letters will not necessarily take the same route to get to your address. Okay? When they get to your address, okay, you would unpack all the letters. You'd know that I'd numbered them on the page, you know, what order they were in. You'd see if there were any missing ones. You'd send a message back to me saying, the post office managed to lose letter packet number 103 and 107. Please resend it. So I'd photocopy the pages and send you just those two again. In essence, that is how a packet switch network works. Of course, it's working a lot faster than the post office. Okay? Typically, transit times across the internet are measured in milliseconds, millionths of a second. This is your ping time. Anybody here heard of ping time? Anybody here a low ping bastard? Anybody here still isn't worth crap on Quake? Even being a low ping bastard? Yes. Okay. There's a lot more to being good at the game than just having a low ping time. But that ping is a measure of latency, and we'll get to that in a moment. So, everybody clear on the concept and the difference between the two major networks designs that existed and exist today? We're obviously going to be concentrating mostly on packet switch networks, because unfortunately I don't know that much about telephone switch networks. I'm not a telephone engineer, although if you attend any of the 2600 meetings, you'll no doubt run into a few, and you'll definitely run into a lot of information about them. So, now some more terminology and a little bit more theory before we start getting onto the practical stuff. Why am I bothering with this? Well, because it's a good conceptual foundation. Boo, hiss. That's the kind of thing a lecturer says. But more importantly, you'll hear these buzzwords all the time, anytime network people talk to each other. Dragon, how many times a day does one or other of these layers get referred to when designing a network? Pretty much constantly. Right. Okay, so let's learn the terminology, let's learn the lay of the land, just like science fiction has a language and a set of conventions, fantasy has a language and a set of conventions, so does networking. Most networking these days is based on what is called the OSI layer model. OSI stands for Open Systems Interconnect. It's a whole committee standards process. We don't care about this, we'll just look at what it means. It is also a theoretical model. Okay? It's not something that actually exists. We're talking about the map, not the road here. Okay? It's a how-to, if you like, generate a network. TCP/IP is probably the most common practical implementation. An IP network actually exists. There's running code. There's network devices that run it. Okay? There is no network device that runs the OSI model. Okay, just to confuse things, there was an OSI networking implementation a long time ago, but that was really a horse designed by a committee of camel, and it died the painful death it should have had. But very occasionally you'll come across it. So the idea with the OSI model is we use layers to break up the networking stack or functions. Okay, anybody heard the term network stack? This is what we're talking about. Okay, the various layers, conceptual layers of software and hardware that make up the networking function. We break up the stack, theoretically, because breaking up complex tasks makes the coding easier, okay? Marginally easier to debug, says the theory, because we're only doing one thing. So in other words, each layer is only aware of the layer above it and the layer below it and how to talk to it. It doesn't care about the rest. Theoretically, this makes writing the code easier, makes debugging the code easier. Anybody who's written real code will tell you that is very much the theory. Now, you'll also notice that TCP/IP, which is over here on the left, doesn't quite match up to the OSI model. The reason being is that the OSI model actually came out after TCP/IP. So it kind of got retrofitted to it. Plus the fact, for a lot of people, including me, the OSI model is a little more pedantic about how it splits functions up. TCP/IP is a lot more practical in terms of how it gloms things together that really don't need to be separate anyway. So, if we have a look at the OSI model and start right at the bottom, okay, the physical layer, electrical signals and cabling, that's all that's specified there. So in a minute, I'm going to be talking about wires and connectors and things like that to go towards making up various types of network. That is the physical layer, layer one. Data link, or MAC, stands for media access layer. If anybody wondered what that is, it's got nothing to do with Apple. And it was in use long before Apple ever borrowed the term from Macintosh. But the MAC layer essentially is the part that adds smarts to the wires. In other words, the bit that can transmit packets from one part of a point on a wire to another. That's all it does. The networking layer is responsible for routing. Okay, so it's equivalent to the post office layer in the postal model. It is the part that routes data to different LANs, different types of networks, based on a network address. Transport, okay, is responsible for the error checking part. So in the brief discussion I gave you previously about the post office example, I was performing the transport function by saying, hey, I didn't get those two letters, please send me another copy. Session is kind of similar to transport in that it starts and stops and maintains order. Transport is more concerned with making sure things get there in one piece. Session is more concerned with timeliness and do things happen within a certain time frame. For example, we typically talk about sessions if you're doing a web-based transaction, buying something with your credit card. We don't want the session to hang there for more than a certain period of time, because then potentially it could be broken, somebody's taken it over, or somebody has attacked it, or so forth. So if you've ever tried to buy anything on a website and walked away from your PC or handheld to visit the restroom or whatever, and come back, you know, 15 minutes later, and it says, no, the session's no longer valid, this is the layer that's important. That's what we're talking about here. Presentation and application, as I said, this is somewhat more of an academic distinction. Presentation is the part that's technically responsible for encryption, data conversion. Don't worry about ASCII to EBCDIC. Only IBM speaks EBCDIC, and nobody likes it anyway. Different data formats. Okay, and the application layer really is, you know, theoretically, this is the only piece of code that non-network programmers are supposed to deal with. As I said, TCP/IP tends to be a little different. IP directly corresponds to the network layer. TCP stands for Transport Control Protocol and is the transport part that runs on top of IP. Bear in mind, IP is the internet protocol. TCP is merely one transport mechanism that runs on top of it. The other one is UDP, Unigram Data Protocol. Anybody here think they know they've used Unigram Data Protocol recently? Played a game? Okay. We'll get into the difference between TCP and UDP in a moment. But there are others, for example, IPsec for tunneling. All right. If you've got a Unix machine available to you, go and have a look at EDC protocols. That's normally where it's put in there. And you'll see what the numbers and different protocols are that can run over the IP network. But TCP is definitely the most common. Also, if anybody's talking about port numbers, they're talking about TCP typically. And then the typical applications, again, in a more Unix and Windows-based world, FTP, SMTP, DNS, Telnet, we can add HTTP on top of that and so forth, generally kind of glom the three top layers together into one set of programs. They may share a common set of libraries that do, sort of, for example, things like encryption or data conversion, things like that, but they're generally one set of programs, as I said, because splitting these three apart, is a bit of an academic issue. Topology. Anybody know what topology means? Topology is the $9 word for how things are laid out. So there are various different ways of laying out networks, and I'm particularly talking about local area networks here. I'm not going to be dealing with wide area networks across a great distance. So very simply, ring, bus, and star. And we can see two examples. There's a ring there. This is where a ring breaks. More about this in a moment. And your typical departmental, or more importantly, game LAN is typically a bus-type architecture. Now, those are the two theoretical constructs. These are the types of networks, FIDE, Token Ring, and Ethernet, that apply to each of those. There are others, but those are the three most popular ones you're going to run across. But what's more common these days is that the ring or bus structure, anybody see why this is called a bus structure? Sometimes called a tree structure inaccurately, sometimes called a spoke structure, but you get the idea. It's a one connection with multiple drops coming off it. The ring, we literally have a ring of communication, and each of the stations pass tokens to each other to say, is it your turn to talk? No, it's my turn to talk, and so forth. However, these days, most of these structures are collapsed down. into a device. So physically, the wiring looks like a star. You've got something in the middle, a gadget into which all the cables are plugged, and all these cables radiating out from it. Okay? And the ring or the bus is actually inside the box, very, very small. But it's still there in terms of the protocol. So the only reason I put this here is people say sometimes say, why rings? Well, the original reason was mostly for redundancy. In this case, for example, we're talking about a FIDI ring. You can see the primary in blue and the secondary in red. If one of the links breaks, basically we connect the two rings at the end points, and you can see we've got a very sort of flat, squashed, C-shaped ring going on there in those four-node examples. Okay? Of course, if it's a star and it's collapsed down inside the box and we lose a port, we just turn the port off. Okay, and we do this inside the box, so nobody cares. All right, very briefly, local versus metropolitan versus wide area networks really is more of a geographical distinction than a technological one. LAN typically means something inside a building. MAN typically means between buildings, okay, or between campuses at the very extremes. And wide area is typically anything further apart than that. Again, it tends to be more of a geographical distinction than a topological or technological distinction because, for example, certain people use hacked wireless LAN technologies with homebrewed antennas to basically create man distance network links between them and their friends' apartments. So, as I said, it's not really a technology-driven terminology at all. Okay, another piece of fundamental terminology and a piece of fundamental technology. Latency versus bandwidth. Frequently confused even by professionals. If I had a nickel for every time I've had to have this discussion, oh wait, I think I do. Anyway, basically, the reason for distinguishing the two, it depends on what problem you're trying to solve with the network. So, bandwidth is how much data can be transferred in a period of time, right? Latency is how soon the first bit gets there. Okay? This is best illustrated by an extreme example. A colleague of mine, who was a networking engineer from way back when, had a wonderful saying. He said, in his case, he was talking about tapes. I've updated it to recordable CDs. But never underestimate the bandwidth of a truck full of CDs going down the highway. Right? But the latency sucks. Okay? Yeah, or SneakerNet is the other one. I mean, theoretically, somebody could write software and implement a packet protocol that actually wrote the data to CDs, okay, said, you know, attached it to carrier pigeon and then retrieved it. Yes, it's been done. Okay. Yep. Okay, so in theory, there's nothing to stop you from doing it, but the practical limitations are not that useful. Now, when I said, take an example, which application we're trying to solve here, something that is bandwidth intensive is me trying to download Dragon's entire prawn collection. Okay? So, yes. Or his MP3 collection or something. No, sorry, I beg your pardon. Hug Me's prawn collection and your MP3 collection. I forget. Whereas latency is going to be a lot more important if we wish to play a game of Quake. Okay? Because in the first case, I'm transmitting a lot of data, but it's not particularly important when I get the first part of it. Okay, it's important that I get all of it within a reasonable time frame. However, in the second case, I really care how long the packet gets there. Anybody seen the sort of warping effect that happens when you have long packet delays in network games? This is caused by a latency problem. Okay, this is also best illustrated by I know a guy who's very close to his central office. He's only got a 288 dial-up modem, but he's a low-ping bastard because he's that close to his central office equipment and his ISP's modem, okay, and their routers. So really, he's on the tier zero, but his bandwidth sucks. Okay, so those are the two differences. Now, something else that's also important when we're talking about bandwidth is the difference between broadband and baseband. Anybody here from Atlanta or surrounding areas? Anybody here have seen Media One's adverts before they got bought out by AT&T? You know, this is broadband, this is the way. Anybody get the impression that broadband meant really, really fast? Anybody? I mean, that's what the marketing people want you to believe. Okay. However, it's got nothing to do with speed. Okay. The terms broadband and the opposite of baseband are literally the number of signals you are sending down a piece of communication media, an optical fiber or a piece of wire. Okay. In the case of baseband, you're only sending one signal. Okay. This is like your phone line, your DSL line, although that gets jittery because DSL and phones share the same line. But in theory, if we regard them as separate networks, that holds. Broadband is more like your cable television, so they weren't completely lying, because your cable television system sends down multiple signals, multiple channels simultaneously, and you simply tune in to the one you want to watch. So that is a broadband network. So even if you don't have a cable modem, even if you don't have digital television, you still have a broadband network. Don't the marketing people love this? Okay, so again, this is some of the BS that people will try and confuse you with, and marketing people will try and confuse you with. It really all boils down to what you're trying to do with a network. All right, let's have a look and do a little bit of cable entomology. I put some of this stuff up here purely because I'm the type of person that likes picking up the floor tile and opening up the wiring closet and having a look inside. Anybody else guilty of that? Anybody else ever been chased out of a wiring closet? Still work there? Okay. It's a measure of your worth that they chase you out of the wiring closet and have a security escort you back to your desk but don't fire you. Yes. Exactly. Fiber is spelt two ways. One is the correct... you can see I've actually... What's happened is Microsoft has actually corrected the correct European spelling of fiber, which is R-E, back to the American spelling, which is E-R. Americans spell fiber F-I-B-E-R. Everybody else spells it F-I-B-R-E, like the French. And particular fiber-based protocols pick one or the other depending on what they're doing. So Fiber Channel, for example, uses R-E to distinguish itself from networked fiber connections, just to make life interesting. Oh, yeah, second point there. If you can afford to run fiber in your home, I want to be your house guest. Okay? Although it's not really the fiber that's expensive, but what you have to connect it to. Right? That too. But even the fairly low bandwidth fiber, relatively speaking, requires hideously expensive gadgets on either end to send useful information pulses down it. Typically, it's a laser on one end and a very fast photodiode on the other. Now, those are getting cheaper, but they're not quite there yet. Yep. Anyway, so basically you can see that they generally have ferrules that hold them on, and essentially, you know, there's a very small, very flat, very well-machined end that basically somewhere in there, if you take a magnifying glass to it, has the fiber. Fibers also come in pairs typically sometimes, and a lot of times those pairs look like two of the single fibers put together. Yes, that's exactly what they are. And the reason for this is most fiber systems can only send information one way, because it's very difficult to have my laser and my photodiode both on the same end of the same fiber. It is possible, but it's expensive. So typically, we normally prefer to use one fiber for one direction communication only and put in a pair of them to make a complete fiber circuit. You can see the names there. I'm not really going to go through all of them. Broken ring. Oh, sorry, token ring. anybody who's had to use it is generally amongst one of the first three circles of hell. But the reason I mention it is that, A, just so as you know, so that if you see this, you can run screaming. Or, secondly, if you find somebody that's upgrading their token ring, you know, there's the outside chance it's worth buying, you know, a complete set of hubs, NICs, and, you know, everything else for sort of like, you know, 2 cents on the dollar. And setting up a cheap network that way. Particularly if you're the type that hosts a LAN party and has people who show up without their own network cards. Although personally, I think they should be running the Avian net. But anyway, it's mostly an IBM invention. IBM tried to push it on everybody else, and everybody else said, no way. In fact, more like, hell no way. Not that some of the other solutions were any better. Two types, basically. That's the classic connector, big chunky thing. And there's the RJ45 connector that looks a lot like the Ethernet connector because it's exactly the same. It looks like a somewhat wider phone jack as well. So that's what Token Ring looks like physically. Ethernet classically comes in three flavors. ThickNet, ThinNet, and EtherTwist, as far as cabling is concerned. ThickNet, or 10^5, those numbers do mean something, more about that in a moment, because it's a fairly fat, thick cable. ThinNet, because it's a thin cable, rather like the one your cable TV service comes over. And EtherTwist, because inside the cable there are multiple twisted pairs of wires. Fairly simple. The ThickNet and the ThinNet are the original bus-type connections. In other words, I have one wire going from computer to computer with drops off it. Here you can see the network drops of ThickNet. That's what they look like on ThinNet. Interesting trivia point, these things that connect to a ThickNet from what's called an AUI, an adapter user interface, are called vampire taps. Okay? Nothing to do with goth, but simply because the only way to connect to this stupid, big, fat, thick cable is to basically drive a couple of pins through it so that you connect with the copper core in the middle and then clamp something onto the braid on the outside. Anybody understand why this was generally abandoned with much enthusiasm by everybody? Because it's a fairly expensive and cumbersome process to implement. However, one of the advantages of ThickNet, with a modern sort of fairly lightweight PC, you can actually suspend the machine in the air by its network card. Also, if you're removing ThickNet from a building, it's fun to swing it. It's fun to throw it over a, you know, a beam on the roof and play Tarzan, because it looks like the big thick jungle vine. Hubs and repeaters for any kind of network, but particularly for twisted pair ether twist networks. Essentially, this is a device that replicates a signal. All right. Why do we replicate a signal? Because signals degrade. They have to be repeated, regenerated. This is digital domain, not analog. We take the signal, we basically read it in, and then we generate exactly the same signal out the other side. If we do this on multiple ports simultaneously, we call this a hub. Why? Because on the network diagram, you typically have the hub in the middle and lots of spokes coming off it, and it looks sort of semi-vaguely wheel-like. And hub is a lot easier to spell and takes up less space on the network diagram than multi-port repeater. Network engineers don't spell very well. Yes. Yesterday I couldn't spell engineer, now I are one. Bridges are used for connecting two LAN segments together. So if you've got a bunch of computers or other devices all connected together on the same bus or ring, even if it's inside a switch or a hub, that is referred to as a LAN segment. Bridges basically build and maintain address tables of the nodes. In other words, they know who's on each port that they're connected to, and they do a certain amount of routing between those two segments. They are protocol independent. This is an important point. They work at layer 2. Okay, so in our case, that's IP. Right? The data MAC layer. So it doesn't matter if it's IP or something else running across it. The bridge will send it. Send it out to the other segment if it knows it's on that side. Okay? That's an Ethernet bridge in that particular case. LAN switches, which have become very popular, are really basically multi-port bridges that can switch at full wire speed. So essentially the technology has become cheap enough that we can take this kind of functionality that we used to only use for connecting segments of networks together and basically give each machine on the network its own segment. This is a lot faster and more efficient because it means you don't see somebody else's traffic. And a tad more secure because of that, but not particularly. Lastly, routers, our big multi-armed friend from the trailer. A router has the capability to forward a data packet from one network to another, typically a LAN or a WAN, LAN to LAN, LAN to WAN, WAN to LAN, etc. So you can see an example there between LANs, between two LANs separated by a WAN. Okay, you have various configurations like router backbones and so forth. But a router is the smarter device. Right? It actually opens up the data packet, right? Looks at where it's going to go, and then sends it on its way. So in the postal analogy previously, it's like the post office, okay, clerk who actually looks at the address on the envelope and decides, you know, which bin it's got to be routed to get on the plane or train or truck that's heading in approximately the right direction. Although given what happened to my tax refund, I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, router backbones are a slightly different architecture where we're starting to deal with very large networks with lots of segments. And in a lot of cases, sometimes this is collapsed inside a building or a data center. So it's just a different topology depending on the scale of the network. But generally, you'll see routers used in one of these three types of configuration. Of course, which gadget to use under which circumstances, should we route this, should we bridge it, should we put a switch in there, is kind of why network engineers get paid fairly well, mostly because they've screwed it up before and know what the right answer is. Or at least the good ones have, right, doesn't it? Okay, so I mentioned switches, connect stations or LAN segments. We're mostly interested in fast Ethernet switches because those are cheap, cheerful, and readily available. But you also get switches for regular Ethernet, token ring, and FDDI. FDDI is fiber distributed data interface. Predates fast Ethernet, but it runs at the same speed. But the advantage of a switch, as I said, is that each user gets their own dedicated bandwidth. And as I said, 100 base T switches are cheap and popular. What I mean by cheap and popular, I have two of them at my house, and the cost on a 5-port switch, sorry, the cost on an 8-port switch at your local Best Buy, CompUSA, whatever, has dropped to about $80 these days. So you're finding them built into cable modem routers. That's the other thing. For the home market, because it's happening on such a small scale, you're seeing a lot of these devices combined into one gadget. So you're seeing the routing function and a switch all in one box. That doesn't mean conceptually they aren't still separate inside the box, but they're all inside one case. Then very lastly, you may have heard the term firewall. Anybody think they run a firewall at home? Okay. Ever wondered what specific function is supposed to be? Firewalls are supposed to keep a network secure. Well, duh. That's what the advertising people keep telling us. Essentially, they can be a router, a computer, or an appliance. Anybody here got an appliance firewall, one of those little $200 boxes, right? Okay. Theoretically, they're to protect you from the outside, from control access to the internet. They provide what's called stateful inspection. In other words, they actually look at each packet outgoing, rather like a router, but instead of just performing the routing function, because there's typically only two connections to the firewall, they also do what's called packet filtering. They can be proxy servers. They perform network address translation and masquerading. The last one is most important for a home network because typically your ISP is not going to give you an IP address for every single machine on your network at home. Neither do you necessarily want every machine on your network at home exposed to the connected internet. You would like it a little more secure than that. So, typically, we'll set up network address translation, NAT, or masquerading, where essentially we run a dedicated network inside our house that's on one of the non-routable addresses, address ranges, typically 10.something or 192.168.something. Anybody looked at their network appliance and seen that that's the default? Okay, this is where it comes from. And we network address translation basically makes it appear that anything that's coming from the computer inside, okay, on the Ethernet side, typically of the firewall, is translated and looks like it's all coming from one spot to the outside connecting network. This is how I avoid having to buy multiple IP addresses from my ISP and how a lot of other people do that. Of course, it gets fun under those circumstances because not everything works correctly. Then we hit the subject of gateways. A gateway used to have a very specific meaning. It used to have the specific meaning of protocol conversion between different types of networks or applications running at the layer 4, or a go-between for two or more networks, or an earlier name for a router. But these days, gateway usually means a system performing one or more of routing, masquerading, proxy, or protocol conversion. For example, on my home network, I have a small Linux box. In fact, it's a laptop because I like laptops. They've got built-in UPSs. It's called a battery. So if Georgia Power suddenly decides to throw the switch and put me in darkness, the thing doesn't crash. So, and that Linux computer is acting as a gateway. Small Ghostbusters pun, I call it gatekeeper, but, you know, whatever. Most people call theirs gateway, but it not only is a router and performs masquerading, it's also my proxy server and so forth. So typically on a small home network, you'll see all of these functions collapse down into one system, performing that as a gateway. Now, whether you choose to get an appliance, whether you choose to set up a network in a box on a computer yourself, generally depends on your own skill level, comfort level, time and money available, and so forth. But conceptually, there's no difference. Just a quick word about proxies. I happen to use proxies at home because they're fairly convenient and I like the caching effect. More about that in a moment. But you're most likely to encounter a proxy server in your working life. Anybody here use the net at their desktop or in their cube or from home and has to go through a proxy? In other words, you cannot directly connect to a machine on the internet. Typically, the symptoms of this are things like Real Player don't work very well. You know, any streaming stuff doesn't work. Nothing on CNN streams properly. And various other things like that. Because essentially what's happening is all the traffic on your local network has to go through the proxy server and out. The difference between proxy and masquerading or a regular router is that the proxy server will actually take the packet, look and see where is it going, what type of protocol is it allowed, and so forth, and will send it through. Typically, most corporations don't proxy everything. The most popular thing to proxy is port 80, the World Wide Web. Sometimes they'll proxy port 25, which is mail and so forth. And we'll see that come up in the movie later. So commonly, HTTP and SMTP, email and the web, and everything else can't go anywhere. So that means typically if you've got a corporate intranet, you can get to, for example, streaming media on the training server, but you can't waste the company's money downloading streaming media from CNN. That's the theory anyway. There are, however, generic proxies. The most popular, well-known one is a proxy called SOX. No, it's got nothing to do with the Clinton's ex-cat. By the way, anybody know whatever happened to SOX? I mean, did Buddy eat him or what? And SOX lets you put a wrapper around a lot of programs, and it's typically the way your average hacker gets through the corporate proxy firewall, me included. All right. Let's concentrate a little bit on Ethernet. There are some eye-blowing stats up there that if you can't read the eye chart, don't worry too much about it. But when we're talking about Ethernet, we typically have an N based X location, 10 base T, 10 base 2, and so forth. The first number is generally an indication of speed in megabits a second. So 10 megabits a second and 100 megabits a second. The base X part generally indicates the type of media it's running across. Okay, so 10 base T, twisted pair, 100 base T, faster running across the same twisted pair. Base 2 is the thin coax and so forth. So those are the more preferred names these days to refer to networks rather than calling it thick net, thin net, twisted Ethernet, or ether twist and so forth. A switch, a hub, a router, and your computer all have what's called a NIC, network interface card, or port. This is the part of the computer, router, hub, switch, or whatever, into which you can insert a cable, preferably the right one. Normally, it's fairly easy because different networks use different protocols. The EtherTwist cables are generally easy to identify because they look exactly like phone jacks, but fatter, with more pins on them. So Ethernet is cheap, fast, and common. Some notes about cabling if you're doing your own home. Twisted pair tops out at 100 meters between gadgets without repeater or hub or something like that. So if you've got a large house or a difficult cable run, you may want to consider other technologies like going wireless. One of the reasons that 10 base 5 or ThickNet survived so long is it tops out at 500 meters. Okay, so you can use it for a longer run. So if you've got a longer run and you've got some older equipment and don't need anything particularly fast, and you can find some thick net in the garbage can, then this is a good solution, okay, or in the surplus store or whatever. Fiber, obviously, can go a lot longer, typically between 1 and 10 kilometers. I've got the miles up here as well, but all of this stuff is measured in metric because it's an international committee. And you can see the number of maximum devices that are on a particular link there as well. So very briefly, that's Ethernet. Now, Internet Protocol, IP, of the TCP/IP that we were talking about earlier, is a Layer 3 protocol. Right? It works at the network layer. TCP is one of the many transports on IP, as I said earlier. Others, okay, TCP is a connection protocol. Because remember, it does the error checking to find out, did we get everything that we sent in here out the other side? UDP is what's called connectionless. It basically is, we stuff it into an envelope, and if you get it or not, we don't care. All right? We just send it out there. Why is this important for games? Because when we're talking about a game and trying to get something within milliseconds to calculate, you know, for example, your rocket grenade in Quake, if we don't get it within a certain time period, we might as well not bother. Okay, it's easier to guess where the rocket grenade was going rather than predict it and then put a little bit of a warp into the game rather than, you know, absolutely getting the exact position of where it was, doing a retransmission, waiting, and so forth. So that's why it's a good choice for a gaming connection protocol. ICMP stands for Internet Control Messaging Protocol. This is what's used by Ping, Traceroute, and various other utilities. Again, it's an equivalent to TCP. It runs at the same layer. It's a separate protocol, and it's really used for diagnostic, and as I mentioned earlier, IPsec, virtual private networks, encrypted tunnels through a network to the other side. So, that said, if you want to set up a home network, you know, what should we do? Well, typically it needs to be fast, cheap, and easy. Fast because, you know, we're typically doing this over Labor Day weekend. Well, I guess not this Labor Day weekend. Cheap because, you know, most of us don't have a couple of $1,000 to drop on a piece of network equipment for our homes. And easy to set up because we don't want to spend, you know, we don't have to go on and read half a networking encyclopedia to set this up. So the natural choice that has evolved to this is typically 100 base T switches. As I said, they're relatively cheap for a small number of ports. Category 5 cable, sometimes you'll see Cat5e cable. For all practical purposes for home networking, it doesn't matter. Get the cheaper one. And the connectors, as I said, the RJ45 type connectors. 100 base T NICs, and a good book on Ethernets. Okay? Home networking for dummies is a good choice if you're new to the field. There are various others. Whether you run your own cable and crimp your own connectors is entirely up to you, how handy you feel you are. I'm relatively good at it, but I don't do it for a living, so it takes me a lot longer than it would take a networking person. But you can also buy cables ready-made up, although be careful pulling them through the walls because you may pull the connector off them. So that's up to you. You can also get little sockets that go on the wall that you plug a network cable into. I like these because they're color-coded the same color as the wires inside the cable and because you can punch them down without a special tool. Okay? Whereas trying to crimp the connector onto the cable requires a fairly expensive, at least $40 tool. Then you'll have to set up and configure the software that you're using on the network, Windows, Linux, Mac, or whatever, to do whatever resource sharing it is. Now, that's a subject for a completely different introduction to networking and assumes you've got the working wires. I've given you some examples of my home network. I run 100 base T at home. I also run wireless because there were a couple of runs where it's inconvenient. These days, wireless, or 802.11b networking, as it's sometimes called, the most common type, has become a lot cheaper than it used to be. The cards to go in a laptop are around about $100 or less, if you go looking on PriceWatch. And the access points to convert it to regular Ethernet run at about $150-$200 each. That's a lot cheaper than they used to be. So I weighed that against having to run several pieces of Ethernet to the second floor of my house, to the bedroom, to my son's room. The rest of them said, damn, this is a lot easier. Be careful, however, there are some problems with wireless networking, mostly to do with the security thereof. If you are running it at home, you're probably not going to be sending enough packets to get it sniffed, but do set the network name uniquely, do set an encryption key uniquely, something sensible, and make sure that your setting on your access point doesn't broadcast or invite other people on, that you have to know the name to get into the network. All of which should be in the instruction manual for the access point that you buy. If it isn't, buy another access point. Okay. Now, for an average LAN party, our needs are slightly different. We need low latency, okay, and lots of ports, okay, cheap ports. We don't necessarily need a lot of bandwidth. The actual amount of bandwidth that, for example, a Quake client sends to a Quake server is minimal. But the latency needs to be good, and there are typically lots of them at a LAN party. What's a good-sized LAN party that somebody's been to recently? Anybody?
30 users?
Yeah, 30 users or so, 30 computers. Okay, that's a lot of ports. Okay, now remember I said an 8-port switch is about $80. You're not going to be doing this with 100BASE-T switched fast. Okay, typically, okay, you're going to get a cheap 10BASE-T hub. Preferably, you'll get this secondhand, some corporation that's just upgraded the 10BASE-T hubs in their closet to faster switches. You'll need lots of cable, preferably with the ends already crimped. And something else a lot of people don't consider for a LAN party is don't forget the power, and don't forget the tables and chairs. What are people going to sit on, and how are they going to power their machines as well? There's a good example going on next door in the gaming room. That's typical for our sort of LAN party setup. And you'll notice that the hubs on top of there are not fast. They're cheap 10BASE-T hubs. Now, if you're going to be connecting together a bunch of smaller hubs for a LAN party, be careful. Okay? There's the cascading limit on this. You can't go more than 3 hubs in a row. Okay? You can't connect one hub to one hub or go any further than 3 in a row. Don't ask why. It's complicated. If you wanted to figure that out, go read one of the networking books. Just don't do it. If there are switches, it's not a problem. Okay? That rule only applies if there are hubs. If you come to one of Johnny X's FreakNICs, you'll have a wonderful example of why not to do this, because that's why half the FreakNIC network never works. Oh, it's supposed to be different. Yeah, I heard that last year, too. Yeah, right. If I can, I'm going to see if I can borrow a large switch for this year's FreakNIC, because I'm tired of this mess. Okay, bandwidth is not an issue for games. Mostly UDP-based, right? So in other words, you're not particularly concerned with support for Novell, AppleTalk, and various other protocols concerned. IP and UDP is normally all you'll need. Remember, if you're setting up a gateway to the internet to proxy correctly, okay, because some of your guests may not have locked their machines down correctly, so preferably set up a proper gateway with a proxy server if you need connection to the internet, and be sure to proxy the game protocol correctly if you're connecting to an internet service outside from your LAN party. But that's a lot of work. Is that really necessary? Most LAN parties are local affairs, only playing local people. So that's a lot easier and simpler to set up. And normally it's a lot more fun because some of the people lurking out there on the net are generally better at this than most of the people you're going to have at the party, so they'll wipe the floor with them, which is much fun. So, any questions on LAN party networking or home networking? Nope. Either you're all sitting there in stunned silence or I've gotten it all exactly correct. I don't suspect the latter. Oh, it was late. Everybody's waiting for Hacking 201 in the beer. Okay. Other places to look things up? These happen to be some of my favorites. There are others. Some of the pictures and notes of this were shamelessly stolen from techweb.com. Anybody here who happens to be remotely associated with that company, please don't sue. Remember the fair use disclosure. As I said, I'm a big fan of the For Dummies books. There's TCP For Dummies, Home Networking For Dummies, Cisco Networking For Dummies, if you happen to deal with Cisco switches at work. Unfortunately, I don't get a promotional consideration for talking about that. Okay, I just happen to personally like the style and everything else. However, the official Bible widely recognized for TCP/IP is this book here, Internet Working with TCP/IP, Volumes 1, 2, and 3 by Doug Comer. And that is sort of like the CompSci recommended textbook on almost every networking course first year. You're told to go out and get that particular dead tree. And it is a dead tree all by itself. I mean, we're talking about three fairly large books. And more preferable to that, particularly for a home or non-work-related user, rather get something called An Introduction to TCP/IP by John Davidson. It's only 100 pages. It's more of a pamphlet, and it really is a very good baseline introduction to the protocol and how it works. All right, before we carry on, any questions? There's a stunning silence. I mean, come on, people. I'm really ready to run out there Montel Williams style and stick a microphone in your face. Or is that the prospect that's scaring you? All right. We're going to do Warriors of the Net. And we are going to be doing this in the style of Misty 3K. Anybody here a fan? Yeah. Okay, good. So we want to do our own cheap shot comments, snide comments, criticisms, and so forth. So please kindly speak them louder. And as I said, if anybody wants a copy of Warriors of the Net and can't find it online, email me on the SE2600 list and we'll see about getting you one. So.
For the first time in history, people and machinery are working together, realizing a dream. A uniting force that knows no geographical boundaries, without regard to race, creed, or color. A new era where communication truly brings people together. This is the dawn of the net. Want to know how it works? Click here to begin your journey into the net. Now, exactly what happened when you clicked on that link? You started a flow of information. This information travels down into your own personal mailroom, where Mr. IP packages it, labels it, and sends it on its way. Each packet is limited in its size. The mailroom must decide how to divide the information and how to package it. Now, the package needs a label containing important information, such as sender's address, receiver's address, and the type of packet it is. Because this particular packet is going out onto the internet, it also gets an address for the proxy server, which has a special function, as we'll see later. The packet is now launched onto your local area network, or LAN. This network is used to connect all the local computers, routers, printers, etc. for information exchange within the physical walls of the building. The LAN is a pretty uncontrolled place and, unfortunately, accidents can happen. The highway of the LAN is packed with all types of information. These are IP packets, Novell packets, Apple Talk packets. They're going against traffic, as usual. The local router reads the address and, if necessary, lifts the packet onto another network. Ah, the router. A symbol of control in a seemingly disorganized world.
Oops, sorry about that. Oh, let's go to this one here, this one here. Oh, this one's here, this one goes here. I don't like this one. Let's go to this one, this one goes here. Left, let's go to this one here. Another channel here. Let's go to that one here. Let's go to that one here.
There he is. Systematic, uncaring, methodical, conservative, and sometimes not quite up to speed.
Sorry.
But at least he is exact. For the most part. As the packets leave the router, they make their way into the corporate intranet and head for the router switch. A bit more efficient than the router switch plays fast and loose with IP packets, deftly routing them along their way. A digital pinball wizard, if you will.
Here we go. Here comes another one. And it's another. Watch this, Mom. Here goes. Whoop, around the back. Hey, in there, in there, in there. Over the left, over the right, over the left, over the right. You got it. Here it comes. Right now, he shoots. He scores. It's going. Hey, wait. Watch out. Here comes another one. Oh, here we go.
As packets arrive at their destination, they're picked up by the network interface, ready to be sent to the next level. In this case, the proxy. The proxy is used by many companies as sort of a middleman in order to lessen the load on their internet connection, and for security reasons as well. As you can see, the packets are all of various sizes, depending upon their content. The proxy opens the packet and looks for the web address, or URL. Depending upon whether the address is acceptable, the packet is sent on to the internet. There are, however, some addresses which do not meet with the approval of the proxy, that is to say, corporate or management guidelines. These are summarily dealt with. We'll have none of that. For those who make it, it's on the road again. Next up, the firewall. The corporate firewall serves two purposes. It prevents some rather nasty things from the internet from coming into the intranet, and it can also prevent sensitive corporate information from being sent out onto the internet. Once through the firewall, a router picks up the packet and places it onto a much narrower road, or bandwidth, as we say. Obviously, the road is not broad enough to take them all. Now, you might wonder what happens to all those packets which don't make it along the way. Well, when Mr. IP doesn't receive an acknowledgement that a packet has been received in due time, he simply sends a replacement packet. We are now ready to enter the world of the internet. A spider web of interconnected networks which span our entire globe. Here, routers and switches establish links between networks. Now, the net is an entirely different environment than you'll find within the protected walls of your LAN. Out here, it's the Wild West. Plenty of space, plenty of opportunities, plenty of things to explore and places to go. Thanks to very little control and regulation, new ideas find fertile soil to push the envelope of their possibilities. But because of this freedom, certain dangers also lurk. You'll never know when you'll meet the dreaded ping of death. A special version of a normal request ping, which some idiot thought up to mess up unsuspecting hosts. The paths our packets take may be via satellite, telephone lines, wireless, or even transoceanic cable. They don't always take the fastest or shortest routes possible, but they will get there. Eventually. Maybe that's why it's sometimes called the worldwide wait. But when everything is working smoothly, you can circumvent the globe five times over at the drop of a hat. Literally. And all for the cost of a local call or less. Near the end of our destination, we'll find another firewall. Depending upon your perspective as a data packet, the firewall could be a bastion of security or a dreaded adversary. It all depends on which side you're on and what your intentions are. The firewall is designed to let in only those packets that meet its criteria. This firewall is operating on ports 80 and 25. All attempts to enter through other ports are closed for business. Port 25 is used for mail packets, while port 80 is the entrance for packets from the internet to the web server. Inside the firewall, packets are screened more thoroughly. Some packets make it easily through customs, while others look just a bit dubious. Now, the firewall officer is not easily fooled, such as when this ping of death packet tries to disguise itself as a normal ping packet.
It's okay, go on, it's okay, no problem. Have a nice day, we are here, bye.
For those packets lucky enough to make it this far, the journey is almost over. It's just a lineup on the interface to be taken up into the web server. Nowadays, a web server can run on many things, from a mainframe to a webcam to the computer on your desk. Why not your refrigerator? With a proper setup, you can find out if you have the makings for chicken cacciatore or if you have to go shopping. Remember, this is the dawn of the net. Almost anything's possible. One by one, the packets are received, opened, and unpacked. The information they contain, that is, your request for information, is sent on to the web server application. The packet itself is recycled, ready to be used again, and filled with your requested information. Addressed and sent out on its way back to you. Back past the firewall, routers, and on through to the internet. Back through your corporate firewall. And onto your interface. Ready to supply your web browser with the information you requested. That is, this film. Pleased with their efforts and trusting in a better world, our trusty data packets ride off blissfully into the sunset of another day, knowing fully they have served their masters well. Now, isn't that a happy ending?
That's it. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if there's anybody remaining, feel free to turn off the recording at this point in time.